coming down to the 16th bowl. Catholic Boy is pulling away. He's so impressive today, the others didn't even have a prayer. Catholic Boy rolls in the run. Happy Travers.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Race the Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Wednesday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. As always, thanks for joining us. This edition of the show, as always on a Wednesday morning, Tom Law from the Saratoga Special, who come a little bit later as president of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Association. He had some NTWAB business to attend to a little bit early, but he'll be over towards the end of the program today. Give a little recap of Saratoga Special coverage of some of the big racing over the last week, but also look ahead to the jump race today. We always bring Tom in to give us some jump race ideas. So, again, that'll be coming up a little bit later on. Also, we'll be visited by Travis Stone, the track announcer from Churchill Downs. As I said on the Handicapper Report earlier, just wanted to get people geared up. With Tis the Law in the mix, obviously everybody's aware that the Derby is right around the corner, but just wanted to give a reminder, because normally first Saturday in May, these 2 weeks leading up to the Derby, people have the laser focus. The workouts are being looked at and whatnot. So I just wanted to gear people up that we're about a week and a half away from the Derby. So I'll have a little Derby conversation with Travis Stone. But we're going to kick things off. Our friend Gary Contessa, again, he's out and about doing some interviews here at Saratoga for this race meet. And we're going to kick things off with one of the Gary Contessa interviews. He interviewed our friend George Weaver, trainer extraordinaire, as it were, George Weaver, who, again, is up here at Saratoga this summer racing some horses. And so Gary reached out to him, and we'll kick things off with that interview. Up next, Gary Contessa and George Weaver.
Hello, TB. And I'm here to give you a little insight into the lives of some of the people in the racing industry. Today I'm with trainer George Weaver. George is rapidly approaching 1,000 wins in his career. He's also made over $35 million in purses, and the best is yet to come. So welcome to the show, George.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gary.
Man, it's good to have you here. Tell me, what is it like, what is your introduction into this game? Like, let's go back to your childhood, let's go back to high school, college, whatever. Tell me when you first decided you were going to be a trainer, and what was your introduction to horses? How did you come on this path?
It came very early on. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and, my family went to the races often. My dad loved to go to the races, and he taught me how to read a form. But I remember going to the races back when I was 2 or 3 years old. You know, we just I always went with them, and eventually when I was old enough to learn how to read, taught me how to read a form and handicap, and I was just always attracted to it. And, as I got to be a teenager, the more and more I was around it, I was like, man, I really want to do this. So I had an inkling that I wanted to be a trainer pretty early on, early teenager.
And when did you go to the racetrack? Was it after high school, after college? Like, when did you make that move towards becoming a trainer?
Well, I got a farm job, I think, after my junior year in high school. It was first experience around horses. They raised some cheap thoroughbreds, and I just wanted to get some experience. And I liked it. It was hard work. The farm was hard work. And when I was there, I was like, man, I need to get to the racetrack. Not that the racetrack was going to be easier, but I was attracted to the action. I wanted to be around the action and whatnot. So I worked that summer after junior year in high school. And then my dad and I came up to Saratoga, and we pitched a tent up off of exit 16 and went to the races every day at Saratoga and bet and had fun. And then went back to senior year of high school. And then I think after senior year of high school, I finally got a job on the track. John Hennig's outfit picked me up. So Mark's father there at Churchill, I was waiting out at the front gate, and they picked me up. And that's how I kind of got into it.
I stabled with John. He was a great guy to be around. And he always was willing to share information. Did he kind of mold you a little bit?
You know, certainly he did. I told him early on that I wasn't just there to be the hot walker that I was. That I really, you know, I wanted to train horses and I wanted to learn. And even though I went to the races with my father, I didn't have a clue about what to do around horses. I didn't know anything. And John told me there, you know, right from the beginning, he said, well, stick with me and I'll teach you. You're going to have to work hard. But, you know, when the right opportunity comes, you know, Mark's over at Lucas's barn, Kieran's there. And, you know, it might be 10 years from now. It might be 2 years from now. I don't really know. But when you're ready and they need somebody, we'll feed you into the organization. And he followed through with that.
And now you talk about being molded. Perhaps the greatest molder of trainers, Wayne Lucas. I mean, he's a guy I wish I had worked for. I mean, he's just a guy who revolutionized the entire game. You did get that call up from AAA to the big leagues at Wayne's Barn, didn't you?
I did. In 91, John Hennig himself, he went to work at Wayne's Training Center out in California. And I kind of had, John told me at the time, you could come with me or they need a foreman in New York under Jeff Lucas. Because Todd Pletcher was there and they wanted to let Todd have a little more freedom to go to the track and do some more of the training parts as well. And I chose to go to New York at that moment in 91.
So tell us, what's it like working for maybe the greatest horseman to ever live, Wayne Lucas? Like, what is his program like? Because he obviously has done such a fantastic job with the trainers that he put out there. Kieran McLaughlin, Todd Pletcher, yourself, Dallas Stewart. I mean, it's one after another that have achieved such a great level in this business. Tell me about that program working for Wayne Lucas.
Well, obviously he's a great horseman, and when I first went there in 91 and came in the barn, I mean, it was the older horses were almost all graded stakes horses, and then the babies were all $1 million babies. So, you know, that in and of itself was impressive. But there's something about his barn when you first walk into it. I mean, the organization, everything is spick and span. You know what I mean? The flowers. He just does everything top rate. And I think that, you know, all of us trainers that came out of that school, you know, it kind of carries through. You know, you want to be well-dressed. You want to be well-represented, well-spoken. And, you know, if you said something the wrong way, he would let you know it. He's like, this is a better way to say a certain thing. And, you know, it's all about being organized, being a good horseman, getting the job done, and being well-spoken and well-looked after.
So what would you say is the greatest thing that you achieved that Wayne would be responsible for? What did Wayne do for you? What one thing did he do for you?
You know, just being in that university, in that school. But Wayne was, he's very inspirational, and he's a great example. You know, when you fall back and you go on your own and you think back, you know, when you come across a problem or you come across a horse that you don't know what to do with, you think to yourself, what would Wayne have done? And, you know, he was a great example to all of us about how to carry yourself, how to represent yourself, what to do with horses when you had them. You know, obviously he's had a lot of great horses, so I think that that's probably the biggest contribution.
Do you find yourself picking up the phone once in a while and saying, hey, Wayne, I got a little problem here. What would you do?
We have spoken to, you know, we've spoken to Wayne on occasion. We got a chance this year when we went to Oakland, we got to stay in his barn. We ran the filly in the Apple Blossom, and it was just so great to be around him there for those last couple of days. I borrowed his pony, and but every morning we would, you know, chat about old times and chat about things. He's the best man in the world to have a chat with.
And your right hand in this stable today is your wife, Cindy. And you guys have been together for a long time, and you're truly a power couple when it comes to training. I mean, everybody knows you, everybody knows your wife. What's that like, working with your wife? Tell me about working with your wife, just to touch on that a little bit.
Well, Cindy is very, very good at what she does. Like, I've been around a lot of great exercise riders, and she just has a knack for getting horses happy. You know what I mean? She has a skill level that has helped me deal with the harder horses to train. Quite frankly, you know, if I didn't have her, I can't tell you how many horses I just would have been SOL on. I don't know what I would have done with them. You know, she could really get into a horse's head, and, you know, we both handle two different sides of it. you know, I kind of manage the condition book and the jockey agents and talk to the clients and stuff like that. But she's back at the barn doing all the work. She watches the people and the horses like a hawk. She knows every single thing about what's going on. And she's just great at it, you know. She's great at making horses happy. And, you know, we occasionally butt heads every once in a while. I don't know if you could expect not to. But still, she has a lot of respect for my side of it, and I have a lot of respect for her side of it as well.
You know, I've had the opportunity to kind of watch your son grow up over the years, because you were very good about bringing him to the racetrack, and I'd always see him around you and around Cindy. How's he doing, and is he next for this business?
You know, we want him to go to school. He's got an engineering mind, and he kind of has that on his, you know, schedule, what he would like to do. And but he is attracted to this game, and he's really, you know, we're proud of him. He has a great work ethic, and he loves animals. You know, he's been around us, and he has an appreciation for the horses and whatnot. And so he just turned out to be just a great young man. And he enjoys handicap, and he likes going over and watching horses run. So it's these last couple of summers, he was able to get his license. He rides the pony in the morning. He helps do anything. You know, high wall groom, throat spray, whatever you got to do. So it's been a real joy watching him. You know, he's developing into his own kind of horseman, own good horseman himself. You know, he's very good at it.
Well, we know where he got his work ethic from, because he's got two workaholics for parents. So you've done a great job, and you said you're proud, and you should be. You've raised a really good son. I've always liked that kid. And George, I can't thank you enough for giving us a little insight into your life today. And I'm sure the viewers learned a lot about you that they haven't known before. So on behalf of Capital OTB and myself, thank you for giving us this time.
Thank you, Gary. I enjoyed it.
This is Gary Contessa with Capital OTB and trainer George Weaver, a look at the man.
I'm in the Hall of Fame. I'm not so sure they didn't put me there. I mean, they were so good, I'm not so sure that they didn't pick me up and put me in the Hall of Fame.
Welcome back. Thanks to Gary Contessa and George Weaver for the interview. And, of course, our man Mick Richards for putting together the footage as well. Always interesting to get some of the background to the trainers, how they got into the game and whatnot. And, of course, George Weaver, part of that Dwayne Lucas powerhouse coaching tree, as it were. Before we go to a break, just always throughout the meet have been bringing up the human side of things, because it's playing out to be a lot of fun, both on the jockeys and the trainer side. Continues to do so going into the last couple weeks of the meet. As far as the jockeys, Irad Ortiz now 2 ahead of his brother Jose. They're 44-42. Joel Rosario sitting 3rd at 37, and again, they're all expected to stay in town, not going to Churchill for Derby weekend. Luis Saez back with 24, Javier Castellano 23, Gaff Leone 20, just looking, John Velasquez 13, going down the list a little bit. The one that, interesting though, Saez, who got the late start at the meet, has made a nice little run over the past week or so. Got hot that one day and put together a slew of winners, and has moved up into, as they say, that fourth place spot. But again, looks like the Ortiz brothers banging it out with Joel Rosario right there. And again, that they'll ride through the remainder of the meet makes that jockey side interesting. Over on the trainer side of things, Chad Brown, Todd Pletcher, tied, deadlocked, 22 wins apiece. Going into the last couple of weeks, Christophe Clement, who got off to the very hot start, still right there in 3rd with 18. Mike Maker, who again has had a nice meet as well, 16. Linda Rice at 13. Asmussen with 10 wins, tied with Jim Bond. The Bond stable has had a very good meet as well. Dave Donk, we had him in a few days ago. He had that nice Sunday, 3 days ago, but the Sunday before, where he had 3 wins on the one card. He's having a good meet also. Ray Handel had him in earlier in the meet. He's having a good meet. Orlando Noda also 18 starts, 6 wins, so a nice meet for him. So, again, on the human side, very, very interesting as we head into the last 2 weeks of this Saratoga meet. All right, as promised earlier, we're going to be joined in a moment by Travis Stone, the track announcer from Churchill Downs. I thought it was worth, again, just kind of getting people into a Derby frame of mind with the different situation this year. Derby's about a week and a half away. So Travis Stone from Churchill Downs will talk some of the Derby contenders and more, maybe hit a little bit on the Kentucky Oaks as well. So we'll take a break, come back. Travis Stone will join us. Stay tuned. No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
It. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got a move that tells me what to do. If you don't, brothers and sisters, then you won't know what it's all about.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, we are joined now by Travis Stone, the announcer at Churchill Downs. Travis, good morning.
How are we doing? What's going on?
Not too much. Happy to have you on board. I said earlier, you know, with Tis the Law in the mix, I think everybody is geared into the Derby around these parts, but certainly I wanted to just alert people a little more because it's different this year. Normally you get to that two-week period before the Derby, everybody's laser-focused. All the conversation is workouts and the lead-up. It's a little bit different this year. How's it changed for you in the prep and now that we're a week and a half out?
Yeah, I mean, one thing you said that's right. It's definitely different this year. It's different than any other year. I'm embracing it, though. I think it's a unique situation, hopefully the only time we have to do something like this. And instead of a Derby where there's a lot of questions and unknowns and, you know, speculative prognostications, if you will, these horses are a lot more exposed and sort of know what they are in many aspects. So it's just a different flavor of Derby, but it's still the Derby. And there's still some buzz. I would be lying to you if I said it would be the same as the spring. I think everybody's a little bit beaten down without the ability to go watch them work out in the morning, go to breakfast at the Derby, down at the Downs, things like that. But the Derby is still the Derby, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking forward to it, particularly up here with Tis the Law in the mix, and that certainly is going to ramp up the enthusiasm in our area. And I'll ask, speaking of our area, I'm assuming you were up to doing some Scroon Lake earlier, but have you returned now to Louisville?
I did. I drove back last week. I went up and spent some time with my family. My parents live up in Scroom Lake. My sister and her kids, my brother, they came in throughout the summer to spend some time. I don't want to say like I'm, what's the phrase, like a tinfoil hat guy when it comes to this virus, but I felt like I just wanted to do my part and stay isolated and saw no friends while I was up there, just hung out at home and drove back here to try and stay as healthy as possible leading up into Derby. So, but it was nice. I mean, I was a bummer not going to Saratoga, not going to the Paddock Bar, seeing everybody downtown at night. But it was a beautiful summer weather-wise. I think I worked outside every day and just really enjoyed it. So it was good to be home for a bit.
Yeah, and I've said it a few times. It's a shame this year with the way the division's played out, some of the horses that have shown up here, and then you add in the weather that fans couldn't be here this year. Just really a shame. Yeah. But similar situation down there in Kentucky with the switch up. No fans will be allowed down there, so it's going to be a little bit different. I'll ask you, I assume every announcer I talk to, particularly on these big days like this, say you get that vibe even through the glass of the announcer's booth. And at Churchill with 100,000+ people, I assume you probably get it. Are you anticipating a different kind of a vibe in the announcer's booth for the call this year?
That's a great question. I think, from personally speaking, I'm still putting as much effort and time into preparing for the call as I would any other year. So, the effort and the preparation hasn't changed. It will be a bit of a bummer not to hear the crowd react to a couple of the announcements leading up to the race and the start of the race. I mean, I don't think I'd be lying if I said that wasn't a letdown, for sure. However, it's still the Derby. There's still a lot of horses in the race, and it's still the biggest race in the world. And so we'll give it the right due, and hopefully it's a good race and they deliver. It's going to be fun, even though it certainly will feel different.
And talk a little bit before we move on to actually this year, just talk overall. How many have you called so far?
2015 was my first, so this will be my sixth.
Six. So I'm assuming when it comes to the Derby, kind of it never loses the luster, and you never lose the butterflies leading into it, regardless of how many you've done.
No, I mean, the butterflies are always there. There's no two ways about that. I think the one thing that is sort of a constant change, or a changing constant, if you will, is that every year just presents new challenges in terms of the horses in the race. A lot of common ownerships in racing nowadays, so that presents a problem when they have similar silks. Mother Nature has been brutal to us the last few years. It's been raining and dark and gloomy and foggy, and that's made it even more difficult. So every year just presents a different sort of challenge, but that's why I got into this thing, was to have that challenge and to try and conquer it. So we'll do our best.
How much more of a challenge is it, the 20 horse field, as compared to a normal, an 8 or 9, 10 horse field?
I just wish I could describe it. It's I've called thousands of races throughout my career, and you're used to seeing 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10 horses in binoculars at any one time, and all of a sudden you now see twice as many, and you have to say them all, and it's all on the stage of the Derby. So it's just a wild experience, and it's so unnerving. There's no other race ever presents the same sort of challenges as that, and it's once you get through that first rundown, so when they go by the eighth pole, it's sort of a reset moment, get back to the leader and work your way through the field. Once you get through the field, you can get every horse in their position. You can sort of breathe just a little bit, because now you're calling a race, and all 18 horses are probably not going to be involved in it from the 5 furlong pole home. It's all just so wild. It really is.
Well, you've been doing a great job. Obviously, it's fun to watch you do it. Homegrown product in the announcer's booth down at Churchill Downs. You do a great job announcing. I remember, years back when I was on the internet radio show with you, and you were with Saratoga Special, and you were in the closet doing the radio show.
Travis at the track. What a trend-setting thought that was. Who would have thought that? I should have kept that going. Maybe could have done something with it. I remember that, yeah.
Very good. All right, let's talk a little Derby for this year and get some of your thoughts, and we'll kind of hit some replays here and hit on some of the contenders. And obviously the top contender is Tis the Law. We're going to watch the stretch run of the Travers here. And to me, I said it in the week after the races, I brought guests in. It was one of those one-word races where you either said, wow, or awesome, or it was just a phenomenal performance. And Barkley Tag has held this horse together, and the subsequent works since then have been very good. But we're watching the stretch run here as he gets geared down late. This is just incredible, given the sub-201 time, which for the Travers over the years historically has been kind of phenomenal. Just a big performance that sends him into the Derby as the clear favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you said it best. It was one of those one-word performances. I mean, of all the Travers that I can recall seeing in my lifetime, there's only two that yielded the one-word accolades, and that was Eric Gates and then Vistalov. I mean, you're just not supposed to win the Travers like that. You know, it's more of Saratoga historically is just more of a grindy sort of you have to work for it type trip going 10 furlongs. And he made it look like it was a one turn mile race at Belmont. He just threw the rivals aside. He is so far and away the horse to beat this year. It's not even funny. I mean, I think we're going to see 7-5, 6-5, if not close to even money come post time. I try to find knocks or try to find reasons why he may not be able to do this again in a week or so. The only thing I could think of was maybe he ran too hard in the Travers because he ran hard that day. But then you look at what Barkley Tag has done with this horse, and there's literally been zero mistakes. And it's a Hall of Fame training effort, in my opinion, for Barkley Tag. And hopefully this gets him into that establishment at some point because he's done nothing wrong. And he's very tough, very tough.
And you mentioned the human side, Barkley Tag. That adds to the story and the fun of it, to Jack Knowlton and the Saratoga folks with some Saratoga-based storylines there. And Barkley Tag, you know, the grizzled veteran going down. But I saw you mentioned I pulled up your Twitter feed last night, and you kind of tipped the cap, and I agree. Keeping Manny Franco on board, where some outfits maybe coming into a Derby would have been tempted to go for somebody with more experience, but there's no faulting, particularly you saw what he did in the Travers. No faulting what Manny's done so far.
No, everybody wanted to sort of yank Manny off after he ran in the Kentucky Jockey Club at Churchill last year, but that was just a weird situation. You know, it was nighttime, the rain was heavy, the track was weird, he broke down inside, didn't really break all that well. And every subsequent start since then, you could tell that Barkley had a plan. And he told Manny what to do, and Manny did it. And look what they have now. They have the best horse in the division, if not arguably the best horse in the entire country. I think he's just as fast as many of the older handicap horses. And, you know, you go through life, and people will say to you, loyalty is overrated. But I also think loyalty is a bit underrated. And I applaud Barkley for sticking with Manny Franco. He's a deserving rider. And look, he's got a rocket ship under him. And I think some really weird circumstances would have to develop for him not to be able to work out a good trip next week.
Yeah, people said to me, what do you think? Over the last week, I've run into people. What do you think, Tislot? Said, if he gets beat, he's beating himself. There's something, he gets a bad post position or just gets something in the trip because the way he's going now. But let's hit on some of the other contenders. Love to get your opinion. And one of the horses, we'll watch the shared belief from a few weeks back out at Del Mar, where 1,000 words for Baffert beats Honor AP. And it was one of those performances that a lot of people said, if you were on the Honor AP bandwagon before, don't jump off. We're watching the stretch here. 1,000 Word is the number 2 horse. Honor AP, the number 5 horse. I don't know. I guess if you were on the Honor AP bandwagon, you stick on. But if I'm on the Tis the Law bandwagon, I'm not really scared away by this performance. What are your thoughts? 1,000 Words and Honor AP.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, I was a big Honor AP fan after the Santa Anita Derby. I thought he ran like a horse that was developing and moving in the right direction. And I think that's what John Sheriffs is good at, is getting horses to peak for big races. But I'd be lying to you if I didn't say that most recent effort was a bit of a head-scratcher. And I think you can legitimately ask the question, how good really is this horse? Is he truly capable of being one of the top horses in this crop, insofar as to beat a horse like Tis the Law? But now, and conversely, his odds are going to drift up. He's going to offer a little bit more value. He's probably going to be higher than you thought he was going to be, you know, 6 weeks ago. So I think there's a positive there. He doesn't look like he's going to have a hard time going far. And I sort of believe some of the chatter around their inability to get him fit in the mornings with the protocols out there in California. Yeah. So now that he's working with Mike Smith at the track, hopefully he's getting more out of those workouts. I think he's very much so in the conversation. As for 1,000 Words, I think both he and Authentic are tough reads out of the Baffert barn. I don't think Authentic really wants to go this far, but 1,000 words, he has at least some efforts where he's come from off the pace a bit. I don't want to totally discount him. I think one of the things that's interesting about this Derby is there's a lot of horses coming in with good speed figures. Unfortunately for them, their speed figures are a lot lower than Tis de Laws. But 1,000 words is certainly in that second flight of horses. But between the two of them, I think I'd want Honor AP out of that race.
You mentioned Authentic, and let's take a look at the Haskell, because I think what you said alluded to is what a lot of people are jumping on now out of the Haskell. At a mile and an eighth, Authentic's going to be the number two horse here. But really kind of life and death to hold off the oncoming New York traffic, the number seven, which maybe indicates that a mile and an eighth, particularly when you talk a mile and an eighth, that Monmouth may be just about his limit. So it is a Bob Baffert horse. On that, the horse will take some action. Be interesting to see what kind of action New York traffic takes coming out of this race, though, for Safi Joseph. What are your thoughts on these two coming out of the Haskell?
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'll throw a third one that came out of that race, too. So Authentic, you know, going to Mon 8th and Monmouth is probably a lot like going to Mon 16th elsewhere, right? The way that track plays, the way those races shake out. As a betting man, I'd be against Authentic in the Derby 8 days a week. New York traffic is probably a little bit underrated, to be honest with you. He's sort of always been looked at as second tier because he never seems to get the big win when it counts against some of the good horses. But from a sheets perspective and a numbers perspective, he's right in the conversation. The horse, and so I think he is probably going to outrun his odds in the Derby. I don't know if he can win, but he's going to give a good showing of himself. But the horse I'd want to fool around with out of there is Dr. Post, who I think's been developing nicely and really had no chance the way that race shook out pace and race shape-wise. I don't think 10 furlongs is going to be a problem for him. He's going to be a big price come Derby Day. To me, if I'm betting the Derby, I'm going to use a horse like Dr. Post to try and key him in third and fourth or even fifth in the high five. I think he's sort of an up-and-coming type that could offer some value. Ultimately, that race is probably, of all the preps, a little bit down the pecking order in terms of its depth and quality. But I think there's some things to take from it.
Yeah, Dr. Post, as we watch that stretch run, ran third in there for Todd Pletcher. And again, still pretty lightly raced, and I agree he's kind of interesting. But the horse that I think folks will find most interesting as an alternative is going to be Art Collector, and we're going to take a look at the Ellis Park Derby from August 9th. Art Collector will be the number four horse. Nice full field of 12 in here. Beats them. I'm not sure how talented a field, but he beats them the way he should. It's the 2-5 favorite. Chart margin was over 3 lengths. Art Collector, again, will be the number four here, getting it done. And to me, he is, as I say, the most likely second choice in here coming out of the win in this Ellis Park Derby, but a nice win just prior to that in the Bluegrass as well. Good numbers being fired. Your thoughts on Art Collector?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a big hometown route. Louisville's really behind this horse. All the connections are local. Tom Drury's sort of an upstart trainer, if you will. Been around the game for a while, but, like, this is obviously his first really big horse. Brian Hernandez, one of the best riders in Kentucky, if not the United States, in my opinion. He ran really well at Churchill in the spring, and it was sort of it was a soft field. Came back and ran really well in the Bluegrass. Beat legitimate horses in there. And I was actually very encouraged that they went to the Ellis Park Derby as opposed to doing what, you know, I feel like a lot of modern trainers would want to do, and that would be skip the Ellis Park Derby, come into the Derby fresh. Instead, he tightened up this horse. That was a good effort. He is the second most likely winner, but I think you have to realize that this is just going to be such a much tougher field than anything he's faced up until now. And it just, you know, I'm not rooting against the horse. I'm actually rooting for him. I think it would be a great story if this horse ran well. But as a bettor and a horse player, these are the types you probably want to fade a little bit. You know, facing competition they haven't faced, he's going to be a shortish price. He has a very similar running style to a couple of the big guns in here, so it's hard to create a lot of separation with him from a running style perspective. You're basically banking on the fact that Tiz de Law takes a few steps back and he continues forward and works out a trip when there's a lot of other similarly styled horses. So I think, unfortunately, there's a lot working against him. But at the same time, I applaud the Ellis Park Derby start, you know, in a day of in racing where they don't run enough. This guy ran this horse, and I think that's a good thing. And so I'm rooting for them, as is all of Louisville. But he's gonna have to improve, and Tiz de Law is going to have to take a step back, I think.
And let's just hit on some of the other ones and find if you think somebody else is maybe interesting in here. King Guillermo, Oh, boy, the layoff to me is just too long to overcome. I mean, this is a talented horse, working well, but I find it hard to make a case. Caracaro is the one that maybe is a little bit interesting to me. Max Player, interesting as well. Alternatives for you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on King Guillermo. If this was a typical year, the way he's working at Churchill, very keyed up into the bridle and hard to control early in his works, would be like an automatic write-off if the scrutiny surrounded these workouts like it does in a typical year. You just can't have that in the Derby. When you get headstrong early in the race, you're toast. Caracaro, I think, is very interesting. I think that's a nice horse. I think he's got a big future. I think the problem there is I think a lot of people have the same opinion, so I don't know if he's necessarily going to offer value, but I think he's really nice. And Max Player is just, you know, he's just a reliable. He's going to grind away. He's going to come from off the pace. And he, like Dr. Post, would be two horses I'd very much so key around with underneath in the Tries and Supers. And just the way this year is shaken out, once you get outside of this core group of horses, you get a lot of 30, 40, and 50-to-1 types are going to have to really step up their game. And so, I'm with you there. I think King Guillermo's probably a little bit hard to take off the layoff. Max Player and Caracaro both up-and-comers, more so Caracaro.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And as they say, we have the rooting interest up here for Tis the Law. So looking forward to him and maybe have a strange, but a triple crown on the line after Derby Saturday with Tis the Law, so kind of rooting for that. But before we let you go, Travis, I just also wanted to touch on the day before. Obviously, we're all looking forward to Tis the Law, but the day before is a race I have said you just don't get in 21st century horse racing that often. Gamine comes up with a big win up here and kind of leapfrogs Swiss Skydiver to go to the top of the class. A week later, Swiss Skydiver impresses, and I don't know whether leapfrogs, but goes right back up. And then Speech is in there as well, so you have three big players. And 3 weeks after these big performances, they're going to meet again in the Kentucky Oaks. While we talk, I'll tell the guys in the control room, they can just pull up, because I pulled up the stretch run to the Alabama with Swiss Skydiver, stretch run to the test with Gamine, and I also wanted folks to remember the Ashland with Speech. So we'll look at those three races, the stretch runs, but just talk a little bit about your thoughts coming into just a loaded Kentucky Oaks the day before the Derby.
Now that's going to be a horse race. There's just no two ways about it. These are very talented fillies. They're very fast. They seem to have some staying power. Swiss Skydiver has just been amazing. She has danced every dance this year, and she just continues to thrive. And like I said before with Running Art Collector, it's refreshing to see horses running races. Imagine that. And so with her 10 furlong win in the Alabama, you know that she's got foundation and staying power in a race like the Oaks. Then you've got to add in Gamine, who is obviously brilliant, exceptionally fast, particularly around one turn. I think you do have to question whether or not she can be as fast going two turns, but I think we've all sort of asked ourselves that question when it comes to Bob Baffert before, and we end up with the money in somebody else's hands, not our own. So I think that's interesting. And Speech is certainly in the mix as well. So, I mean, these three, and the way the race could shake out, it's going to be fascinating, because obviously Gamine is fast. She's going to go to the front. And it's just like, how much do people want to press her? How much do they want to go with her? Do they even want to tempt fate because she's so fast? Does she bottom them out? This is a puzzle. From a gambling perspective, I do think Gamine's going to go favored, because I don't think the public's going to be able to bounce off the big figures. But I've softened on that stance now that the Alabama figure came back strong. Of all the Kentucky Oaks, I'm trying to think since 2015 onward, this is by far the one I've been most excited about. And you're right, it doesn't steal the headlines from the Derby, but arguably it's more competitive, I hate to say it.
Yeah, I am looking for, I've said ever since that Swiss Skydiver win, that matchup is really going to make the weekend very, very special. And just before we let you go, you alluded to it earlier, but people have been questioning over the past couple of months, is this Kentucky Derby, is this Triple Crown easier or harder given the scenario? And reading your Twitter feed, you made a great point, and I hadn't really thought about it until you pointed it out. But this year, given that it's a little bit later and some of the horses have matured more, we have more triple-digit buyers going into the Derby this year. There's more experience and more triple-digit buyers, so I think you can make the case it is a little bit harder this year.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair statement. These horses have been allowed to develop, and the true distance horses of the crop have stuck around, and they'll be involved in this race. Whereas most Derbies, let's be honest, there's a lot of horses that are going to end up in the Alan Jerkins, right? and not so much true distance horses down the road. Whereas this year, there's a lot more distance horses. From a numbers perspective, the race is faster, which is not totally unexpected because we are later in the season. But I will say this, the one thing that's sort of lingering in everybody's thoughts is if, big if, Tis the Law wins next Saturday, is he truly going for a Triple Crown? And I was bummed out the Belmont Stakes was not at a mile and a half. I find that to be the coolest part about that race, believe it or not, shockingly. I'm not saying anything profound there. But what Tis the Law has done since then and around it, he has proven to be the best horse in the crop. And if that Belmont had been a mile and a half back in June, he would have won that by even more, in my opinion. And so to me, this is very much so. A Triple Crown will be on the line if he wins the Derby. And he's going to have to earn it in the Derby, because I do think this is a tougher Derby than we'll usually see back in, you know, early spring. So I'm with you there. I think this is going to be tough. He's going to have to earn it. And then, oh, by the way, you know, if he gets through this next phase, there's a lot of good horses waiting for him in the Preakness. And again, the same scenario, horses that have run big figures. And so this is a good story for racing. It's different. It's atypical. It's not what we'd ideally want. But as I said at the top, I'm embracing it, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and then you throw in the fact that he had a race in between in the Triple Crown, which doesn't happen in the 21st century. It's made it very interesting. Yeah. Travis, really looking forward to listening to you starting next week down at Churchill Downs, and wish you a lot of good luck on Derby Day as well. Really appreciate the visit.
You got it. Anytime, and close out the meet strong up there.
That's the game plan. Travis, thanks a lot. Travis Stone, the announcer from Churchill Downs. We'll take a break when we come back. He is in the green room, as were Tom Law from the Saratoga Special. We'll talk a little jump racing today, some of the recaps that the Saratoga Special has had on the great racing from the past week. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Thank you. I think what you guys are doing is awesome. You're doing a great job. Keep that game rolling.
Seth, you do a great job too. So thank you, and I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate watching your show every day.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Wednesday means a visit from Tom Law at the Saratoga Special. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Seth. How are you today?
Very good. And I mentioned earlier, normally we have you on the 10:20 slot a little later today because as the president of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Association, you had a call, and when you sat down, you said you were talking to some of the pool reporters that will be at Churchill for Derby Day.
That's right. Yeah, just got off the line with a talented and excellent team of five pool reporters. Churchill Downs allowing limited access to the stable area. So they've designated five slots from the National Turf Riders that we sort of picked and who we wanted to do. So made a call for volunteers and got some good representation. Got Nicole Russo from the Racing Forum.
Saratoga native,
who I hired at Thoroughbred Times, got her out of Saratoga and down in Lexington.
Yeah, she used to be working with the Saratoga.
That's right.
When I met her.
Byron King from the Blood Horse used to be with the Racing Forum. Jenny Reese, past president of the Turf Riders and an Eclipse Award winner. Alicia Hughes, former president of the Turf Riders, works for the NTRA and is a good reporter. And Greg Hall, who's the vice president of the Turf Riders. So kind of a Kentucky contingent that's going to be down there doing that work, just producing content, you know, basically from now until the run-up to the Derby, you know, video content, audio content, written sort of stuff that will be sort of funneled into a, you know, sort of a space that reporters all over the country will be able to grab and share, people that can't get to the Derby or that don't have the access. They credentialed quite a few people to actually cover the events, but, you know, kind of like here, you may have people that have frontside access only but not backstretch access. So I'm kind of working on with that team. I kind of said, you know, look, I'd love to be there and kind of working with you guys and help you out, but it makes a lot more sense for you guys to sort of take the lead on this. So I got it all set up, and now hopefully it'll all sort of run smoothly. We'll see.
I'm back in wood for you.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, but,
no, but they're all pros. Great. I know all of them. They're all.
It's a great
Jenny,
group.
I think she's working harder now than she was for the Louisville Courier. Well, she's out on the backstretch all the time.
She would
I
agree
pull
with
up
you.
Some videos. I use them on here because she does. She's tied into really Kentucky racing now, and working for a bunch of circuits down there. Yeah. But she's, as I say, she is busy now.
Yeah, Kentucky HBPA has her sort of producing content that I know a lot of the media outlets down there use, national media outlets use as well. I mean, lots of interviews. She does some work for Ellis Park, some work for Kentucky Downs.
Yeah,
she's a, you know, if you need somebody to work hard, she was the first person I asked.
Love to have her on the show, too, just interviewing her. She always gives us some good insights. In fact, next week I'll probably pull her on.
She'd be great.
Talk a little bit coming into the Derby.
But tell her it's part of the responsibility for the pool recording.
I will. I'll pull that out. Yeah. I'll pull that card out. Let's jump back to Saratoga Special. Again, we have been reminding people throughout the meet a little bit different. It's an online version this year. Normally you can pick it up at the track or around town, but now you pick it up at thisishorseracing.com or type in Saratoga Special into Google and you can find it that way. Saturdays and Wednesdays. And let's talk a little bit about the coverage over the past few days and the Wednesday coverage. I'm assuming you probably hit on the weekend, which a couple of nice grade ones this weekend. Halliday on the front end in the four-star day. Got Stormy, I think, kind of flattered herself a little bit getting back into the game after a couple of pass for the two previous races that had people scratching their heads a little bit, and then Rushing Fall, I thought, looked good in the Diana on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote the story about the Diana, and I called it the race of the meet so far. I mean, you talk about it looked like the race of the meet on paper going in with all the horses that were entered. Obviously, they ended up with five with a gate scratch. Graham Motion lost Secret Message at the gate, but the five that ran all looked legit. Starship Jubilee, you know, Sister Charlie are beaten by, you know, Mean Mary is second, and Rushing Fall, like you mentioned, just ran lights out. I mean, so good. They run 145 and change for a mile and eight and really finishing. I mean, you talk about two horses just throwing it down at the end. It was a cool race and followed up on, like you said, a good four-star day. That was a pretty deep group in there, you know, good credentials. I mean, Chad Brown with four in there, and they're all off the board. I mean, that's how competitive that race was. I mean, you look at that. And Halliday was a horse that in our 2020 special, which we did in the spring leading up to the Saratoga meet, we did a stable tour, a Facey Tipton stable tour with Todd Pletcher. We talked to him about Halliday. And I went back and looked at I interviewed him in June. I looked at the comments. Sean interviewed him again in July or August, right before the Travers. And the comments were a little bit similar but different. You could see, like, he was talking about the horse's development. Very interesting. So, you know, a lot of useful information there. Like you said, we have in the special. Facey Tipton's been a great supporter of ours over the years. Just got a text from Boyd Browning this morning saying, good job and keep up the good work. We got 13 issues in the books. Four more to go, which is seems bizarre. Normally, four more to go would be would be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This year we're going, we got another one Saturday, and then Wednesday, Saturday for the final week of the meet, and then we're going to circle back a week after the meet's over in the 12th, which will have closing weekend, Kentucky Derby. Again, I'm going to have to use those pool reporters to get my access, and then probably some sales, yearling sales related stuff. So the Facey Tipton sales are right after the Derby, along with the start of the Keeneland September sales. So that'll be a busy issue, and then we're going to take a deep breath and figure out what the fall holds for us, for sure, like everybody, I guess.
And, you know, it was a little bit different this year. You had some issues out earlier in the year as well, so certainly as the meet gets over, you'll want to continue to go to this is Horse Racing website and keep up with what the plans are going forward, but still plenty of great Saratoga coverage coming up. And all the usual stuff is there. I love the first couple of pages with the worth repeating and, you know, the quotes from around the track and whatnot and the numbers. And, then the stable tour is a lot of fun. But we always get an update. You know the numbers for Shapazian?
Shapazian, 98.
Ooh. I think I'm at 91, maybe a little more than that.
Me too.
So I'm
90.
I'm still within, we're within shouting distance, which as compared to years past, I think we can be proud of that.
I know. He's got me by, I was looking at it, I was like, maybe I can get to 100 at the end of this week. I always look at 100 was sort of a benchmark.
Yeah, me too.
Actually, have been fewer races this year, so, I mean, some of them are a little shorter fields and stuff, so maybe we're doing a little bit better than we normally do, but, you know, my percentage is right around the same, and I was thinking to myself, I went for a walk this morning, it was a beautiful day, and I was thinking, all right, you're only down 8, Shapazian. If you beat him by 1 a day the rest of the way through, you'll win. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. And then I just thought to myself, when do you ever beat him consistently day after day? I mean, there might be a day when I do it. Maybe. Not late in the year. It seems like late in the year, he always just schools me. And he likes to
I'm still going to be optimistic. I'm going to hold some optimism.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's not over.
Absolutely. There's still. And I said, you know, we think, oh, man, in our mind we're thinking it's almost over. And then, like you, I was kind of driving thinking, and it dawned on me, still have 11 of the 40 days left. It's still over 25% of the meet left.
That's right.
Plenty of good racing, plenty of opportunities.
Absolutely.
But, again, we should mention, if you do want to follow the handicappers, Tom's one of the handicappers from the Saratoga and doing a great job. But John Shapazian, year in, year out, over the past couple of years, has been at the top of the heap. But the handicappers are available every day.
We put the picks on the website on Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays. Yeah, so that's how we have our running total. A little bit different format this year, but, you know, that's where you get the picks. Charles Bedard and Rob Whitlock are our other two handicappers. They're behind me. I want to keep them back there, which is good. I don't mind to be second to Shapazian. I'll take it, right?
If you can be second to the king, you're the prince.
That's right. Hey, why not?
All right, let's speaking of last week, I wanted to go back and just recap the New York Turf Riders, the highlight of the meet as far as on the jump side, and it was a great story. You were down there after the race, and Leslie Young got a little emotional after the race. It was fun to see. And she gets the exacta in here. It was Rashawn, the number one horse, and Redesia, the number three, and it's trainer Leslie Young, 1-2 in the New York Turf Riders. We were talking last week that because of the schedule this year, this could have an eclipse implications. I don't know if it worked out that way, but it worked out very well for Leslie Young.
Definitely made it a little bit confusing as to what's going to happen now with the voters. I guess they got to figure it out. You know, and snap decision the day before.
Yeah,
a lot of people might be like, what about him? he doesn't have the grade one on his resume, but 1-2 for Leslie Young and the Turf Riders. You know, it was one of those things you looked at. There were some high weights in there. I kind of said it. I thought you can go one of two directions in here. You got to think the high weights are going to be the ones to beat, or maybe somebody that gets in light. Rashawn obviously went to the front almost from the get-go. He was in light. He hadn't run. He was fresh, so he didn't run in the Smithwick, which, you know, you were there, and I asked why, and basically they have a situation where they only had a limited number of jockeys. They might not even have had a rider for him, so maybe that's why he didn't run. Turns out to be a blessing in disguise. He gets it done for Bruton Street, you know, U.S. Another big win for those guys. Horse that they bought over in Europe from in Ireland, and he's turned out well for them.
Yeah, Tommy Garner on board, and he was talking about having his choice between the two horses.
Yeah,
and kind of tilted towards Rashawn, and he said, "In the stretch, I thought maybe I made the wrong choice, but turned out to be the right choice."
Certainly. Absolutely. And Tommy Garner, an interesting story. Sean Clancy wrote about it in his cup of coffee. He was involved in a kind of a scary incident involving a car getting caught in floodwaters, and he and a friend were on their way. They were finished riding out in the morning at Leslie's farm in Pennsylvania. And stumbled upon, not stumbled upon, but came upon this family that their car had been swept away, and they helped save them, along with a guy that was driving like a bucket loader down the street that worked for like the town or whatever. I think they actually got in the bucket and kind of made a human chain and like rescued these people out of it. I'm like, what kind of story was that? Like, he, Tommy Garner said that the ABC News and people were trying to interview him, you know, to do a story. I'm like, they should. They were kind of heroic in what they did.
And then he comes up and gets a grade one.
Here we are back, and he's riding a jump race a couple days later. Grade one jump race. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah, very good.
Great stories in this game. You know, I mean, you couldn't make it up.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. All right, let's get some thoughts on today's jump race. This is one of the, there's still two more, right?
This is the next to last. Okay. Yep. So next week, it'll be that sort of that handicap group, that Iranistan and that group of company that runs in. So pretty good jump race. I don't want to knock this group, but that's probably a little bit better class of jumpers than here.
This is a fun race, though, to handicap. We did it on the handicapping show earlier. I asked the guys to pull up the replay from Colonial Downs with the silent prayer.
Yep.
And you'll see that one, I believe, on the outside, kind of hold off a horse coming on the inside. First start of the career for Jonathan Shepherd. I tilted in the direction of the entry, and people who watch me enough know that I had to go that way. It's Jonathan Shepherd with a couple of lightly raced horses, both coming out of two-mile wins at Colonial. I like the fact that they're winning over a racetrack type of environment, but, like, really, the entire field, there are distance question marks for the Shepherd entry, but all of them going the 2 3/8 miles. That's going to be the question. As they go over the last jump and around the final turn, who is kind of not getting the 2 3/8 and who maybe appreciates it? So you're using a little bit of a crystal ball, but I kind of tilted towards the Shepherd ending.
Yeah, you want to watch the setup, how it goes. You know, you want them to go very relaxed at the beginning. They kind of have a whole extra half turn. They don't start in the home stretch. They start on the back. So they have a quick jump to get over there and another jump at the start. What the start of the 2 16th usually would be. You know, I sort of think the entry in here is a little vulnerable.
I don't blame
those Colonial races.
I think it's married to Denny Shepherd's horse.
The racetrack setting is beneficial that they're gonna see that again here. You know, faster ground. I mean, a quicker race usually than the up and down a Middleburg or Great Meadow, stuff like that they see. Silent Prayer, I think he's a good one. I think the 1A French Light is maybe the horse that the Shepherd people really like him. You know, his form looks really good. He's got a third, a second, and a win.
Yeah.
The comment lines are a little bit shaky. You know, they referred to him as, you know, finished well and gamely. I watched those replays. He did not finish well in that first one. I mean, he stopped, you know, gave it up. And then Sean had a horse in there, Lonely Weekend. It was second. They were finishing well. They were just rolling up on him. It seemed like he was the kind of horse when it was really being asked, he shut it down. He got it done, obviously, the next time out. Those maiden races are a lot different, ball of wax than what he's going to face here. Yeah. I mean, these are horses that have won, and some of those maiden races, I pulled up the form on some of them. A lot of those horses run in maiden claiming races, things like that. So the form's a little bit suspect. Now, having said all that, the horses that are actually have run consistently, maybe at this level, they have some serious question marks as well. I picked the two, Prayer Hope, which is Jack Fisher's horse. Big shocker that I picked Jack Fisher. I feel like I've been picking him the whole meet.
Well, I put Brian's Baked Cookies right underneath. Yeah. I just was kind of drawing a line through the last race a little bit, and then I had Prayer Hope in the third spot. Both Fisher horses.
Coming back on 2 weeks, he kind of ran an even race. Of the ones that ran in the Court Ruler kind of, you know, Zoom Zoom Zoe race that, you know, was here just 2 weeks ago, he ran okay. I mean, he was even. He had a flat race where he ran off first time out. Jack thought he would win that flat race, the maiden special weight, and then he comes and runs here. He runs fourth, you know, a little bit even. He's a couple lengths ahead of a couple of the other ones that are in here. Brian Bakes Cookies, he was the one that's okay. So we talked about Leslie Young and sort of skipping the Smithwick. She has one in here, Tom Garrow. He has sort of similar deal. He ran at Middleburg, didn't run, and now he comes and runs. He's got Tom Garner again. Might be a little bit of a price. I put him fourth, actually. I picked the two horse. I picked, in the second spot, I picked the three, Critical Data, which is a horse that has really good flat form. That last race was just a total puzzler. And I got to tell you, as a reporter, I didn't necessarily do my homework like I should have. I wanted to go by and talk to Richard Valentine and kind of find out what happened there, because I know that he was bullish on the horse. He was in the fast car race. That was a good race. He's got a little bit of spacing now, July 29th. But I was thinking, like, what happened in there? Like, that beat 27 lengths, never really interested in the race. I just think he's better than that. And, you know, we're going to find out.
Yeah, because his first jump start was promising.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very, very good run at Middleburg. You know, he wins. He wins well. And you think, all right, that sets him up for, you know, I'm not thinking he was going to maybe win here, but just to show no interest at all. You know, he beat two horses, got beat a ton of lengths. You know, so I'm willing to give him another chance. And then I picked the 1A French Light in the third spot, just because I think he's got experience over jumps. He runs well. The 2 3/8 maybe be a question for him. I mean, but he did get up and down that Great Meadow and Middleburg courses, you know, which are undulating. If you can find those replays, they're amazing. I mean, just I know you've shown them before.
Yeah, and
they're
great. People want to on these jump races watch the replays. Go to the National Steeplechase Association website. There's a little link that says, I think, Video Archives. You click on that, you can pull up the meets and watch these races. And it's helpful.
You get a lot of useful information. It says the horse was gamely. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure he was totally gamely. But, you know, hey, the guys that are making the chart lines, and they have a hard job. I'm not knocking them. I don't want to disparage them. But, you know, we'll have to see.
And you mentioned a place like Colonial. Mm-hmm. The guys who are making the charts are normally making them for flat races. So it's probably a little bit different when you're looking at the jump. Yeah. And the guys who are making them doing the charts for those hunt meets, I don't know whether they normally would do them, or I don't know who those guys are.
There's a guy that does them, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that he does any other races throughout the year.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So they're just kind of keyed in on the jump races. But, so it's a fun race today. Again, with the distance question mark, it's going to be interesting to see coming around that final turn. And don't forget, kicks off at 12:50 today.
That's right.
Jump days, it's always a little bit earlier, so keep that in mind as well. Tom, as always, appreciate the visit. What do we got? One more.
One more, I know. More crazy, right?
Yeah.
We'll be here in September. We'll host it. We'll pretend there's jump races.
Zoom it. We'll zoom it.
There you go.
Everybody's doing the Zoom.
There you go.
But again, appreciate the visit, and we'll talk next week.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll take a break, and I'll come back and wind up the show. So we'll head to a break. Stay tuned. We'll wind up Racing Across America right after this. Welcome back to Racing Across America. Again, just going to wrap things up on a Wednesday morning. Thanks to Gary Contessa and George Weaver. Nice interview again by Gary Contessa. And again, our man Mick in the control room. Mick Richards put it together. And when I mentioned Mick on the field assignments, I always like to tout the guys working every day. Brian, Danny, and Dino. Danny and Dino down in Albany. Brian here every day in the control room. Appreciate their help making me look good, or as good as I can look, I guess. So again, thanks to Contessa and Weaver. Thanks to Travis Stone from Churchill Downs. Again, just wanted to alert people, get the juices flowing a little bit. Still plenty of great racing here at Saratoga. But again, that Derby, it's a week and a half away this year. And of course, Tom Law from the Saratoga Special. Before I go, let me remind you of the promotions coming up. There's a double promotion this afternoon at the Clubhouse Racebook. If that is your venue of choice today for watching Saratoga races, get a little added fun with the double promotion. Tomorrow there's a $100 online knockout challenge. Take a little pop at that. There's also an online late pick four bankroll of Mike Callahan. Those both happen tomorrow. Check out the website for more information. Friday, the bounty bet returns. You play the late pick five at Saratoga with your Capital OTB bet account, and you're in for all or part of the bounty. Last week, one lucky patron took it all down. Maybe that can be you. Just play the late pick five on Friday with your Capital OTB bet account. Friday is also a track bonus day, Saratoga track bonus. The top 50 highest wagering account holders get a little extra money in their account. Saturday Syndicate, Mike said there might be a couple spots available. That's the promo where you put in $25, join a bunch of other patrons. OTB puts in some money, and so for $25, you become part of a $750 late pick five ticket on Saturdays. A couple of them, I think three of them have hit so far this season, two of them for pretty good money. So again, Saratoga Syndicate, check the website to see if there's still an availability on the team. If not, it opens up on Sunday, so you can take a shot at the last one on Sunday, perhaps. Speaking of Sunday, this Sunday there's an OTB Live bankroll with Sully from Bailey's, downtown Saratoga. I was there last night for some dinner, sitting out on the patio. Nice location right in downtown. Watch the races and participate in the bankroll with Sully, the $500 OTB Live. That's Sunday at Bailey's in Saratoga. Sunday there's also a double promotion down at the Clubhouse Racebook, so you can take advantage of that as well. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this Wednesday morning again as we kick off the penultimate week here at Saratoga. I had some fun this morning. Hopefully you did too. Maybe more importantly, got some good information over the past couple plus hours, the handicapper support, and here on Racing Across America. I'm going to wrap up the morning programming here. We're back in tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for more handicapper support. I'm back in tomorrow at 10 a.m. for Racing Across America. So in the meantime, enjoy the races this afternoon. Don't forget an earlier post time with the jump race, 12:50. Cash some tickets. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for the handicapper support.
Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier online wagering site in New York State. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit LeahCars.com. Leah Cars for life. And the new Capital OTB mobile app. Wager anytime, anywhere. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.